Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Women's Wednesday here on Mind Talk. If it's Wednesday, we're talking to a woman or we're talking about a woman. So I am very happy to introduce to you today Pam Franklin, who grew up in Jackson, Mississippi, and currently lives in Celebration, Florida with her husband of 25 years. But her life as a child was anything but a celebration, and in many ways, she lived a waking nightmare, not all of the time, but certainly much of the time. Pam Franklin, author of My Five Sisters, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you.
Now, Pam, your story is titled My Five Sisters, but it's actually not about five sisters. It's really about one sister and her many parts. Is that correct?
That is correct. She had multiple personalities.
Well, let's start with what that actually means, because as you know, there's long been controversy about whether or not multiple personalities actually exist. Is it real? Is it not? At this point, it's called dissociative identity disorder. What's your sense of multiple personalities? Do they exist? Did you actually live with someone who actually had five personalities?
Well, I lived with someone who had that had the five personalities. They had different voices. They had different facial expressions. They dressed differently. They treated me differently. I cannot say that she had multiple personalities. I can just say what I experienced living with this person with these personalities.
Fair enough. Let me just go over what you just said, because I know for some folks that just seems so odd. She had different facial expressions. She wore different clothes. She behaved differently. With each of these personalities within themselves, they may themselves have had different kinds of psychiatric issues, but they were all in one body.
Well, that's correct. Angry was always... had a really high-pitched voice. She screamed a lot. She was extremely violent and always very, very angry. And that's why at the age of five or six, I gave her the name of Angry. I knew when Angry showed up that day that I was going to have a really bad day. Now, there was Sad. Sad cried all the time. She cut herself. She burned herself. She wanted to die. She said she wanted to die. She told me this every day. That was a personality that now probably would be bipolar. Then there was Kind. Kind was just the sweetest person in the world. She would take care of me. She would put Band-Aids on me. She would bathe me. She would take me to the store and buy me candy to try to make up for what Angry did to me. And then Hero never really talked. I knew when Hero was there, she was going to save me, and she pretty much kept me alive.
My goodness. All right, so now we've talked about four different personalities, if you will. And what about Normal?
Well, Normal was Angela. She was my sister that everybody else saw in the family. No one else really saw these other personalities in the first 4 or 5 years about my dealing with them. Normal was very kind at times, and then she was not so kind at times. And that was just being a sister or the sibling rivalry type thing. She was not as happy as she was before these personalities came forward, but she didn't know about these other personalities. They all knew about her, but she did not know about them. She knew she was losing time. She knew she was losing days. She was very confused. She did not want to admit to herself that there was anything wrong with her.
Well, and that's an important piece, this experience of losing time and losing days, as well as the other personalities knew about her. She did not know about them. Can you just say a little bit more about that?
Well, I think she first started knowing about the other personalities or knowing something was wrong with her when she started failing in school. She started getting behind because these other personalities, especially Angry and Sad, would go to school in her place. She could not keep up with her homework. She could not keep up with her grades. She would cry. She would be upset. My parents would try to help her. I would try to help her. We all tried to help her keep up in school. She just couldn't do it because most of the time she went in to take these tests, she couldn't take the test. She didn't know what was on the test. Now, Angry liked to go to school in her place for her because she was all about the boys. She wanted to go off skip school with the boys. This is when she was older, of course. And Sad went to school, and she would she went to school with the idea that that's where she got her drugs and her alcohol. She used a lot of drugs and alcohol. There was a lot of abuse with her, with that personality that she had, and that's how she got her drugs and her alcohol. She traded six for drugs and alcohol.
So for you as a little one, this has got to be not only frightening, but horrifying. I mean, just in so many ways.
Well, it was. I never knew. Each day when I woke up, I never knew which one of these personalities I was going to have to deal with that day. I knew if it was Sad, she was going to sit in her room, and she was going to cry all day. She was going to take razor blades. She was going to cut herself. She was just a very, very depressed personality. Now, I knew if it was Angry that there was going to be a lot of turmoil in what happened that day, because she would beat me. She would throw me in the closet. She would leave me in the closet all day, every day. She would make me do horrific things to put my life in danger.
And let's talk about that, because your book, My Five Sisters, starts with you. How old were you when you were forced into an oven?
I was 5 and a half.
All right, so paint that picture for us, if you would.
Well, I had been playing at my friend's house. My friend's grandmother owned a boarding house, and she had all these different apartments, and we would always go and play in these different apartments. We'd take all of our dolls, and we would play. Well, I overstayed that day when I was supposed to be at home, so Angry came looking for me. She walked in the room, and I knew that I was in trouble. She walked over to the oven. She took the racks out. She put them on the floor, and she said, "Gideon." And I'm begging her, "Please don't make me do this." And she said, "You know, I'm going to kill you if you don't get in the oven." So I climbed in the oven. She turned the gas on. She took a match, threw it in the oven, and blew me across the room. I was burned and tattered. My eyelashes were stuck together. My eyebrows were burned off. My skin was burned like a second-degree burn from a sunburn. And then she drug me home and made me tell my mother that I had been playing with matches and blew myself up.
How old was your sister? You were five and a half.
I was 5 and a half. She was almost 6 years older than me.
Okay. And so the day that she forced you into the oven, this was an oven at your friend's house?
Yes.
Okay. And I just want to stay with this for a moment, because as I read your description of this, you know, it almost takes your breath away, even as you're reading it. For you, it literally did. But this idea that there could be a child or any human being so filled with rage that they could say to another living human being, "Get in the oven. And if you don't get in the oven, I'm going to kill you." So for you, you had a choice of being killed or being killed.
Exactly. And that's the way most of my days went.
When you went home, she took you home, you were in a lot of pain.
I was burning from head to toe. There was a lot of pain.
And what happened when you got home?
Well, when I got home, Kind knocked me out. And when I came to, Kind was there. And she was trying to make me, you know, she took a washcloth and she was cleaning my face. And when she got home, she took my burned clothes off. She washed me. She was scared to put me in the water. She didn't know what to do. She called my mother. My mother came home. And when she gets there, I'm just this tattered mess. My mother takes me. This is in the 1950s. My mother did not drive. She had retinitis pigmentosa, so she was blind, basically. She knew she didn't have a way to get me to a hospital, so she took me into the kitchen. She laid me down on the dining room table, and she whipped egg whites, and she covered my entire body with egg whites. Now, this is something that obviously my grandmother had done. It was a kind of a family remedy for burns, but she covered my body with egg whites, and it was very, very cooling. And then she took me and put me in a tub of cool water, and I sat in that tub of cool water for an hour just trying to get my body to cool down.
What did your mother say about what happened to you?
Well, she asked me what had happened. Of course, I started bawling. I was crying my eyes out.
I'm sure.
And at that time, she said, "We'll talk about this later."
And when later came?
I told her that my friend and I were playing in the apartment, and we decided we wanted to cook something. We turned the stove on, and it blew up.
And did she buy that?
Yes, she did.
As you look back on that day and that moment and that story that you told, what do you think about the fact that she actually bought that story?
You know, it's really, it's hard to believe, especially in this day and time. I think everything was just so different.
Yes.
In the 50s. People didn't, there was no way to rationalize anything else that was going on. And I think that's why she believed what happened. It was what I told her. She could not have, there was no other explanation for what happened, and so she accepted what I told her.
And for you, dealing with, I mean, you're a little one yourself, and you're dealing with someone who had to seem like a monster. She was older than you, and at five, if you've got a sister who's almost 6 years older than you, she's pretty much a grown-up compared to
right.
you. So she's older than you, which automatically would make her more powerful, stronger than you, taller than you. How did you cope with this? And this is just one example of what you went through as a child.
You know, I cope with that one day at a time. And I detail this in the book. I loved movies. I lived in a town where I could walk downtown, and at 6 years old, in the 50s, you could walk up, give them your dime, and they would let you go into a movie theater and stay there all day. And that's where I spent most of my days when I was with her, to try to keep away from her. And I was watching Gone with the Wind, and I'm watching Scarlett O'Hara, and she is so determined that she is not going to let this beat her, that if she can just make it through the day and make it through tomorrow, then tomorrow is another day. And at a very young age, that's the way I live day to day. If I could just get through today, then I can make it through tomorrow. And that's basically the way I live my life.
You know, it's amusing to hear you talk about handing in your dime and getting to spend the day at the movies, because those days are certainly very long gone.
You're right. I could take one quarter, 25 cents, and I could get a movie. I could go into the movie, get a Coke and popcorn, and spend the day for 25 cents.
Those were the days, huh?
They were.
And the fact that you could safely walk to the movies by yourself, and so what a difference, though. I mean, you could walk by yourself to a movie, stay in a movie surrounded in theory by strangers and be safe, and yet home not safe at all.
And that is correct. I felt a lot more safe, and I still today feel safe. I'm in the movie industry. We build movie theaters. We own movie theaters, and that's probably one of the reasons I ended up in that industry. But I go to a movie, every movie that comes on I see, and my favorite time is 3 o'clock in the afternoon when there's no one else there, and I get my same popcorn and my same Coke, and I sit fifth row center, and I just kind of escape. It's just still that peaceful for me to go there.
As you were growing up in your house, were there other siblings in the house? Who lived in the house with you?
Well, I had my oldest brother join the Army. I mean, joined the Air Force, and he left, so he was out of the house. And then I had a sister, an older sister, that got married and moved to Chicago. I had one other sister that lived in the house with us, and she was a nurse, and she worked odd shifts, so she was in and out of the house a lot. And then there was my mother.
So And talk about Dad. Who was Dad? Where was Dad? What was your experience of Dad?
Well, when my middle sister, the one that was a nurse, Lola, was 15 years old, my mother walked in and caught him having sex with her. She threw him out of the house and divorced him. Of course, nothing like that was ever talked about in the 1950s. There mm-hmm. was no one I knew that had a divorce. I was so embarrassed that I was from a divorced home, because that just didn't happen. It was a traumatic experience that no one explained to me what was going on. All I knew was something really, really bad had happened in our house and that my dad was gone. I had no idea what sex was. I didn't know what molestation was. I didn't know any of this. So I am sitting here terribly confused about what has happened. All I know is he's here, and then he's gone. In the 1950s also, no one would ever think that there was such a thing as pedophiles or incest. So the judge gave my father visitation, and my sister, Angela, and I had to go stay with him every other weekend, which gave him free range with us.
You know, you're right. Those were very different times. Mm-hmm. Just the fact that he was not that there wasn't a place for your mother to go and report the behavior. There wasn't a way for him to be arrested. And the fact that they would actually allow you and your sister, and Angela is the one who had the different personalities.
Right.
The fact that the judge would actually require you and your sister to spend unsupervised time for today's society is jaw-dropping. But in those days, that's just the way it was.
It was exactly the way it was. And, of course, my mother had no idea that that was going on with us. We had no idea that that had happened to Lola. When this happens to you, and I think that's still true today, you never tell anybody. You just don't talk about it. For some reason, you blame yourself. You think it's your fault. You think everyone's going to blame you. It's just this huge secret that the person that is abused holds within themselves.
Well, and part of the way that that happens is that the abuser instills that belief system in the abused person. It's a way to control the victim.
Yes, he did do that. Like I said, well, he did not sexually abuse me because Hero saved me. Whenever my father would come for me, she would walk up, take his hand, carry him into a room, and close the door. Now, I had no idea what was going on behind that door. I just knew it was wrong, and I knew it made me very uncomfortable. But she protected me from him. Now, Angry hated me because they took all of the abuse, and Hero took all of the abuse away from me.
And again, when you're talking about Hero and Angry and Kind and Sad and Angela, you're talking about the same person who had different personalities that would show up any given moment, any given time. But you could tell who you were actually looking at or talking to based in large measure on the differences in their physical appearance and in their physical presentation.
And how they treated me. It was really obvious how each one of them treated me.
For you as a little one, just the confusion of that. I mean, there was a lot of chaos in your house, clearly. But just the confusion of there being so many different personalities inside this one body, this one 6 years older than you, huge hulking body. I mean, she could have been 5 pounds, but she was 6 years older. Just the confusion that would put you through.
There was a lot of confusion, but I learned at a very early age that I had to be a survivor to survive, and that I had to learn to deal with each one of these personalities. I walked on eggshells for years until I knew which one of these personalities I was going to be dealing with that day, and it was a learning process. The abuse was a lot more in the early days because I was so confused and I did not know how to react to any of these personalities because I didn't know which one it was in the beginning. It took years for me to figure out which one of these personalities was going to do what to me that day. It didn't take long to figure out that Angry was the violent one that was always going to hurt me, though.
And the names that you refer to the different personalities as in your book and as we're talking now, these are names that you came up with. These are not names that they gave themselves.
No, this is my name for the personality. That's how I distinguish the personalities.
Did the personalities give themselves different names?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, because that does sometimes happen.
Well, they may have, but I don't know that. None of them ever discussed that with me.
Okay. Pam, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like for you to talk to us about the day that you were outside and you fell, and your arm was broken. It was actually dislocated, but I'd like to talk about that when we return. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You are listening to Women's Wednesday here on Mind Talk, and I'm having a conversation with Pam Franklin, who is the author of My Five Sisters, a psychological thriller based on a true story about multiple personalities. We'll return in a moment.
Thank you.
I know the abuse that you experienced is many years past, and you're an adult now with your own family, and you've written this book. But I wonder what it's like for you right now in this moment as you and I are talking about not somebody else's life, but your life, things that you actually experienced.
Well, this book was very cleansing for me. I had carried this load in my brain and in my body for all of these years. And when I sat down and wrote this book, I started out as a journal. And when I finished it, I let several people read it, and they're saying, you know, this really needs to be a book. So I wrote the book, and then this child became a part of a book and a character in a book, and it just changed my life completely. Everyone that knows me would tell you that it was just a life-changing experience for me to take this that I'd had inside of me for so long and put it in this book.
So as we talk about it today, it feels like what?
Well, when I wrote this book, I wrote this book in 3 months. I wrote 8 to 10 hours a day for 3 months. I cried all day long every day. I cried all night long every night. I knew if I ever stopped, I would never get it out. It was just horrifying to bring all this stuff back up again. Well, you know, after I wrote the book, I can talk about this book. I can read this book without crying or being upset because I have taken her and put her over here. I don't hate her anymore. I don't feel guilty. There's just a different type of relationship I have with this child now.
So absolute release from so
exactly.
much pain and horror that you carried for so long.
It is amazing the difference that I could even talk about this without crying because I couldn't for years. And I wrote this in a first person, and it puts you in this child's shoes. The entire book, you feel like you're there. And so writing it, I was back as a five-year-old child again. It was very, very difficult to do. But now I can talk about it, I can read it, and it's just not me anymore.
Which is so healing and cleansing and empowering.
It is.
And I note that one of the things that you said you wanted to accomplish in the writing of your book is to shed light on sibling abuse and childhood bullying. And certainly your book does that in ways that I think might not happen otherwise. I mean, you know, it's one thing to think about the concept of sibling abuse and childhood bullying, and we've certainly had those conversations here on Mind Talk, but it's another thing entirely to actually walk inside that child's shoes, as you have been able to create within the pages of My Five Sisters. Talk about the time that you were put outside by Angry, I believe it was, and it was cold and you were freezing, and ultimately you dislocated your shoulder, I think, but you thought that you had broken your arm.
Well, I woke up that morning and it was sleeting, freezing cold, and I was just sitting by the window in the living room, and it was dark and gray and cold, and it was just one of those days where even I was depressed, and I was very, very quiet because I knew as long as I was quiet that Angry or whomever I was going to deal with that day would be asleep. So I was very calm, and I was sitting there looking out the window, and Angry comes running in the room. She grabs me by my ponytail. She throws me on the floor. She drags me across the room, opens the door, and throws me outside and locks the door behind me. I have on my pajamas, very thin pajamas, and I'm sitting there stunned by what happened. I look around, and I'm going, What am I going to do? It's freezing out here. So I try to get behind the chairs and cover myself with cushions, and I'm thinking she's going to come at any time and open that door and let me back in the house. I have no idea how long I sat there, but then I finally realized she is not going to come and help me. Well, by then, my slippers were freezing to the front porch, and I get off the front porch, and I walk around the side of the house, and I think if I can just get to the window, my bedroom window, I can look in and see if maybe Angry is not there and there's somebody that's going to be there to help me. So I get this rickety lawn chair and I put it up to the window, and I climb up to the window to look inside. Well, I can't see anybody in the window. So I turn to get off the chair, and Angry jumps up at the window and starts beating the window and screaming at me, and I slip and I fall. And when I fall, I land on my shoulder. And when I stand up, my right arm is hanging down beside my body. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, I have broken my arm, and she was going to kill me if I broke my arm. I make my way around to the back door to try to get inside. I climb up the stairs. I get inside to the back door, and the door's locked. I can't get in. I'm freezing. I'm purple. And I'm so cold and so tired, I don't think I can do anything else. So I find this little blanket, and I wrap it around me, and I say, well, the only thing I know to do is just, you know, pile up a little pile here and try to stay warm. Well, suddenly the back door opens, and it's Kind. And she sits down, and she rocks me, and she says, I'm so sorry, I couldn't help you. And she takes me inside and puts me in a nice hot bath and tries to cool me up. She knows my arm. She thinks my arm is broken also, so she calls my mom. And we wait for my mother to come home, and then they take me to the hospital.
Now, describe for us the neighborhood that you lived in, because I know somebody's saying, well, didn't anybody see this little girl outside in her pajamas in all this bad weather? What kind of neighborhood were you living in?
Well, we lived in just a normal neighborhood. Unfortunately, the way our house was sitting and all these houses on the street, you had a porch on the left side of your house, and then you had a side of a house, and then that house had a porch on the right side of that house, a left side of that house. So none of the porches or any of the houses faced each other to where you would see what was going on, especially on the side of the yard I was in. Now, we did have a neighbor that we were really close to. I did not even think about going to the neighbor's house. All I could think about was get me inside the house.
And it's interesting that you said when you thought your arm was broken, your next thought was that Angry was going to kill you because you'd broken your arm. Given that Angry seemed to be so intent on causing you harm, why would a broken arm further enrage her?
Well, because she was keeping me. She was responsible for me, and she let me break my arm. This is what's going through a child's mind, you know. I broke my arm. It's going to be her fault because she was watching me, and she did not keep me from breaking my arm. That's what I thought, you know. When I have to tell my mom that I broke my arm, that's going to be her fault.
And you knew that if you said anything that would get Angry into trouble, that ultimately you were going to pay, and you were going to pay big time.
Exactly.
Your mom comes home, she sees your arm. What does she think is going on?
Well, again, when she saw that my arm was broken, of course, she wanted to know what happened, and I start crying again, and she said, well, let's just get you to the hospital. We get to the hospital, and of course, the doctor asked me what happened to my arm, and I won't tell him. I won't tell them what happened.
You're afraid to tell anybody the truth of what happened.
Exactly. So I just would not talk. I just absolutely would not talk.
And, of course, in today's world, with an injury like that, somebody's going to put a call into some agency, some organization, and have this looked at in a more intense way. But in those days, you didn't talk. They fixed your arm and sent you home?
Exactly. That's exactly what they did.
Now, your mom knows at some point that you are having all these horrific things happen to you. What did she think that was all about? Did she just see you as clumsy? Did it ever occur to her that Angela was harming you in any way?
You know, I don't think she ever did equate all of my injuries to that. I was a tomboy. I climbed trees. I rode bicycles. They all talked about me being the big tomboy of the family and always getting hurt. So it was just kind of like a little joke with the family, you know, that I was always hurting myself because I was always climbing and falling out of trees, which was what I told them. I was always falling off of my bicycle. So those are the type of things that they thought I was just a clumsy child.
And what about school and teachers? Did they see you in the same light?
You know, I hid this all so well, which is not unusual. This is what most people do.
It's true.
You know, it's like these kids in school that are bullied and bullied and bullied and end up shooting people. You hide it so well from everyone. You learn at a very early age to hide this from everybody. And that's what I did. I masked it. I hid it. My teachers had no idea. And I did have one friend that knew a lot of this because she understood what was going on. But she's a child also. She's not going to tell anybody.
Right. You said something fairly stunning a little bit ago in that your mother found your father having sex with one of your sisters.
Mm-hmm.
That was not the first time your father had approached one of his children.
No, we didn't. Okay, there's five of us, and none of us ever told any of anyone else that they were being sexually abused. I did not know this about my other sisters until I was an adult.
Which, again, makes sense. And very often, there's one child who will sort of take on the protector role, if you will, trying to protect the other children in the family, and will hold the secret in part because he or she thinks he's protecting the others.
Yeah, I think everybody thought they were the only one.
Yeah.
I don't know why you think that, but that's very common that I have learned now, that you think that you're the only one. Well, basically, he tells you that.
Exactly.
You know, you're special. You're my little girl. You're my little angel. You're so special. And it's a manipulation. You know, they manipulate you into believing that you're the one, so you don't tell anybody.
When your father approached you, there was a time when he approached you.
Yes.
Talk about what that was like for you.
I was quite young. I was probably around five and a half or six, somewhere around there. And we had no air conditioning. It was burning up hot. You slept with the windows open and the fans blowing through, and I only slept in my underwear and my panties, basically. And I wake up one night and I feel someone tugging at the side of the elastic of my panties, and I freeze, and I'm thinking, the monsters under the bed have come out, and they're, but why are they touching my panties?
Mm-hmm.
And then I smell the alcohol and my father's cologne, and I'm going, why is my daddy touching my panties? And I open my eyes, and I look at him, and he has his eyes closed. And I stiffen even more. I'm just frozen. And I look at the foot of the bed, and at this time I did not know who Hero was. I gave her this name later. But there stands my sister at the foot of the bed, and she looks at my dad. He looks up, and she shakes her head no. And he gets up, and he stumbles, and he falls on his hands and knees. And then he gets up and he stumbles out of the room and follows her.
It's a stunning picture that you paint, and yet we know things like this happen on a daily basis in many households, way too many households.
That's true.
The experiences of continually being afraid of your dad, the chaos of his drinking, the chaos of your sisters, and let's talk about just for a moment the way in which multiple personalities are formed, because the thinking is that it is an outgrowth of having sustained extraordinary abuse of one kind or another. Is that your belief in terms of what happened with your sister Angela, who you began to refer to as these five different personalities, that she too experienced extraordinary abuse at the hands of your dad?
I think so, because I could see these personalities forming as these things happened. And I don't know if it was a need for her. I don't know if it was a need for me. I'm not sure, of course, how any of this could have happened or why it happened. I do realize and do understand that it did stem from the sexual abuse, that these personalities could not take whatever pressure or whatever they had to deal with, and so they would obviously let somebody else do that for them. I'm not sure how these personalities work. Like you said, some people believe people have multiple personalities or DID. Some people don't. I just know this is what I dealt with,
right,
and these are the personalities that I had to live with.
And when talking to victims of rape, not of incest, but of rape, it is not that uncommon for rape victims to talk about sort of leaving their bodies and seeing themselves above their bodies and you know, being someplace else or being someone else. So when you think about that, and then you think about what was, it sounds like, almost a daily occurrence in your household with one of the children, at least.
Mm-hmm.
that kind of sustained trauma, yeah, your sister found a way to quote-unquote survive it by being different people.
I think it was her coping mechanism. I think that's how she coped. Like I said, one of the personalities wanted to die desperately, and anger was not going to allow that happen. These personalities that knew about each other, none of them wanted to disappear. They all wanted to be there, especially Angry and Sad. There was a war between them that went on all these years because Angry wanted to be the main personality and Sad wanted to be the main personality because she wanted to die, and Angry would not let her do that. Angry would always come forth. She was the strongest and stop her from killing herself.
At some point, and I want to ask you some other questions, I'm going to ask you to talk to us about what ultimately happened with Angela being Angry, Sad, Kind, Hero, and of course Normal, and Normal being the one who was your sister, Angela, the one who, before all of this happened, you and Angela had a reasonable relationship, yes?
We did. We were really close when we were small, and not until these other personalities came forth. And she was so confused. She did not understand what was happening, and she started to withdraw. And she did not have that outgoing personality anymore. She did not have any friends. She never wanted to leave the house. She was just confused and embarrassed. She wouldn't talk to me about it. She definitely wouldn't talk to anybody else about it. So she lived a pretty miserable life.
The times in your life when your sister, when Angry, would be the one who would throw you in the closet. You talk about Teddy Long. Who was Teddy Long?
Well, Teddy Long was, I called him my savior. He was my imaginary friend. Of course, at the time, I didn't know that that's what he was because he was so real to me. But he was just this little blonde-headed, blue-eyed boy, curly-headed boy, that was always there for me. He would tell me it was okay. He was never mean to me. He would tell stories. We would play games, and that was my coping mechanism. That's how I kept my sanity, is because I had this person that knew and understood everything that was happening to me that I could talk to about this.
So whenever you were thrown into the closet, It came to pass that you kind of knew that Teddy would be there and you wouldn't be alone.
That's true. That's exactly what happened.
Okay. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue with Pam Franklin, author of My Five Sisters. Welcome back to this edition of Women's Wednesday here on Mind Talk as we continue with a disturbing and stunning story of abuse and at the same time an amazing story of resilience and survival and empowerment. Pam, there was a time in your story when you talk about a doll, Lulabelle. And children have dolls, but you talk about the time that Lulabelle had been harmed and you were quite disturbed by what you saw. Tell us about that.
Well, we'd spent a day with my family, and Angela really did not want to participate in that day because she was angry about something that had happened the day before. And when we got home that evening, I went to bed, and for some reason, usually when things happened that she did not like, if it was angry, she or Angela, they would pinch me or punch me or something when I got in the bed. And that night, it was all very calm and it was all very quiet, and which was not the norm. So I wake up the next morning, and my doll, Little Belle, is lying there, and she has destroyed her. There's blood all over. She's punched her eyes out. And I'm just watching this. I'm looking at this doll, and Kind opens her eyes. Obviously, it was Angry in the middle of the night that did this to my doll. Kind opens her eyes and looks at me, and she says, "I am so sorry she did this to you." And that's what Kind did. She would come in and apologize anytime Angry would hurt me.
Now, what was the sleeping arrangement in your house? Were the girls all sleeping in the same room?
Well, Angela and I slept in a room together. We slept in a bed together for many years. Sad, I always knew when Sad was there because Sad always wet the bed. And I would have to get up in the middle of the night, change the sheets, change my pajamas, change her pajamas. And finally, my mother bought us twin beds because she just, of course, back then, bedwetting was just, it was like, you're just doing this on purpose. You don't have to do this. So my mother finally bought us twin beds, so I did not have to sleep in the bed with her any longer. But yes, we had a room. I stayed in the room with her my whole life.
Your whole life.
Yep.
Talk about what happened ultimately to Angela. I mean, there came a time when, as you say, your older sister married and left. Your brother married and left. There was a time when an exorcism was attempted to be performed. Can you briefly tell us about what was going on then?
Well, Angry, it got, the older Angry got, the harder it was for her to hide these other personalities, especially Angry and Sad. They would see her, other members of my family would see where she had cut herself. They would see, you know, where she had burned herself. She had hidden it for many years, but this started coming out. And then Angry started fighting with my sister Lola. They just absolutely hated each other. Also, of course, she could not bully her, Lola, because Lola was bigger than she was. So they fought quite often. And she would go into these terrible rages, and she would scream about Lucifer. And my brother would come, and he would say, "There's something wrong with her." And so they called a priest in, and the priest had her go to a psychiatrist. And they all agreed that she was possessed by the devil. And they came in to our home and performed an exorcism on her, thinking that this was the devil inside of her and not these other personalities. Now, I knew there was no devil, and I knew this was not going to work because it was other people inside her head. But they did do the exorcism, and Angry was so frightened at that time that somehow they were going to get these personalities integrated to where she would no longer be alive, and that was not anything she wanted. She wanted to continue with her life. And, you know, that's basically what happens when you integrate these personalities. Four of these people are going to have to die. Only one can survive.
Right. And what's interesting is you did say that among the people, the experts that Angela was taken to for evaluation was a psychiatrist who also agreed that she was possessed of the devil and needed to be exorcised.
Right. They could not do an exorcism unless she had seen a psychiatrist first. Or that's what they told us.
Okay.
So that's what they did. They said that, you know, she was possessed by the devil, and they did an exorcism.
And how did that work?
Well, you know, Angela stayed. She was the one that they did the exorcism on. Angry hid for quite a long time after that. She did not come out for weeks and weeks because she was afraid if she came back out that they were going to do this again or they were going to send her back to the psychiatrist. So she stayed at bay for quite some time after that until the last scene in the book when she and Angela and Angry and Sad had this battle between the three of them.
Can you talk about that battle?
Well, I came home from school, and I was looking for Angela, and I could not find her, so I would go in the bedroom. I go outside. She's usually outside smoking somewhere. I can't find her, and then I go to the bathroom door, and I try to open the door, and the door is locked. So I go get my handy paper clip, and I open the door, and Sad is sitting in the bathtub looking at me, and the water is red. She has cut her wrist in numerous places, and she is bleeding. And then Angry tries to come through, but you could see the battle between the two of them. But Sad was so determined to die, she was not going to let Angry save her. And I look at her, I know it's not Angry, I know it's Sad. I walk over to the bathtub, and I'm going to try to help her get out, and she looks up at me, and she shakes her head, no. So I turn around and walk out of the bathroom door and close the door.
And what ultimately happened?
Well, my mother and my sister came in, and my mother called an ambulance, and they took her away to the hospital.
And
that was not the first time she tried to kill herself. She tried to kill herself numerous times over the years. And she almost succeeded this time.
And typically it was Sad who was trying to kill herself.
Yes. Angry did not want to die. It was always Sad that tried to kill herself.
And where is Angela today? What's going on?
She passed away when she was 55. She started smoking when she was 9 years old, and she had emphysema, early onset on emphysema, and she died from emphysema.
And throughout her life, these personalities remained?
They did. And I don't talk a lot about her children because I don't want to invade their privacy, but she had other personalities. She lost some of the personality that she had with me. Hero disappeared when my father died because obviously that one was not needed. Kind dissipated quite a bit. And then from what her children have told me, she had got other personalities. They did not name them, of course, the names that I gave them,
sure,
but they had names for the personalities that they dealt with. And with talking with them, especially one of them, my oldest niece is what I'm closest with, and I've talked to her numerous times about this, and we've recorded this, and she basically had three or four other personalities other than these personalities as she grew older.
And is it fair to say that she remained untreated, Angela?
You know, when I was 16 years old, she walked in and tried to do her bullying, and she pushed me against a wall. I was bigger than she was by then, and I looked at her, and I told her, I said, if you ever touch me again, I will kill you. She walked out of the room and never spoke to me, one word to me, until the day she died. I did not exist. We would go to family parties, we'd go to Christmas gatherings. She talked to everybody else in the room. It was like I did not exist. She never acknowledged that I was alive after I got that power over her. Now, with talking with her daughters, I do know that she was treated, but I don't know to what extent she was treated or if she tried to integrate these personalities. I lost complete contact with her.
And, you know, one of the challenges, I think, in terms of psychiatric treatment is if you as the treating clinician don't, and I'm not saying this is true for whoever worked with Angela, but mm-hmm. just in general, if you don't believe that this kind of experience can occur, then you're not going to pay attention in the same way that you would if you were able to acknowledge that this does happen. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you the number of people I've talked to who have had been diagnosed at some point with, in those days, it was multiple personalities, but it was literally at some point, because throughout their lives, they were diagnosed with everything but and told that multiple personalities didn't exist. So it can be very difficult to find. I think it's easier now, but it can certainly be difficult to find someone who's got the expertise and the awareness to treat this kind of trauma.
Well, I think you have to want to be treated, and you won't have That's to want that too. Help. And I just don't think she did.
Well, and again, there was so much chaos going on within her and so much that wasn't seen of what was right in front of people. What would you like people to think about in terms of sibling abuse and childhood bullying?
We all know that there's so much sibling abuse that goes on, and people think it's sibling rivalry. I think parents, do not want to admit that they have a child that would be evil enough to do that to a sibling. We protect our children from bullying in schools, but I don't think we do enough to protect our children within the home.
And so for parents or would-be parents who are listening, if you could say one or two things to them, what would you say?
I would say talk to these children, the younger children, at an early age and make it perfectly clear to them the difference between sibling rivalry and sibling abuse. Abuse is when someone is hurting you intentionally over and over again. Sibling rivalry is when you're vying for your parents' attention. It's not that, it's not abusive, but when someone is hurting you continuously over and over again, and you have fear in your life and fear in your heart, then that is sibling abuse, when you're afraid of that person.
And, one of the things that I'm sure you would agree with for parents is this notion that many parents operate under, which is, oh, no, not my child.
Exactly. That is exactly the problem.
You can't go there because it might be your child.
It might be your child. And there's a lot of them out there. We both know that all of these shootings, something has happened to these children at a very young age to cause this, unless they are mentally ill. There's some underlying reason why, and most of it now is bullying. They've been bullied somewhere. They're doing drugs. They're doing alcohol. There's a root to this thing somewhere.
Well, and the kind of rage that evidences itself when a child is planning and picking up a weapon and shooting, killing other people, you have to know that that didn't just show up that day.
It just did not.
Right.
That is the truth. It just didn't.
Tell us about your life today. You own theaters. You work in theaters. What's your life like today?
Well, I can say I have a very blessed life. I have a wonderful husband. I have a daughter that's a psychologist. She has two grandchildren. She lives in Charleston, South Carolina, so I spend a lot of time in Charleston. Of course, I spend a lot of time in Celebration, Florida. We travel the world over. I have been probably to every country in the world. I live a very, very blessed, happy life. I've been very successful in my life.
And I notice at the back of your book, there are a few pictures of you and, a couple of people who other folks might recognize. Let's see, Ellen DeGeneres, George Clooney, Jennifer Lopez. How did these happen?
Well, being in the industry that I am, I go to a lot of award shows, go to a lot of cocktail parties, and these people, it's a block, but you have to be in a blockbuster movie to go to these things that I attend. You're in a room with these people. There are no bodyguards. It's dinner, cocktails. It's very, very, very calming. It's really in a place where they're not afraid to be around or somebody's going to come in and try to hurt them. So, yeah, we mingle and we talk, and they're so kind. I've never run into anybody that's not kind. And they just love talking to you and taking pictures. And I've been doing this for 25 years. So I've met a lot of people.
And, what's interesting is that what was your place of safety and escape as a little one literally still remains your place of joy and pleasure and peacefulness and wonderful opportunities and wonderful experiences.
Well, and I think the reason why all of this happened for me is I got into counseling very early, age 20 to 30. I was in psychotherapy for 10 years. I probably would not be where I am today if I had not had all of that intense therapy that I had.
And was that something that you did by your own choice at 20 years old?
Well, when I was in high school, my best friend's father was a psychiatrist, and they lived on the grounds of the mental institution in Jackson, Mississippi, and I would go out there and spend weekends, and we would wander over, and we could go in the dorms with all of these people. Of course, now that we understand that they were probably bipolar, back then they had no idea what was wrong with them, and I would sit there and look at them, and I'd say, they're not crazy all the time. This kind of comes and goes. So I would go back, and I would ask her dad about this, and I was very inquisitive about it, and he kind of figured out that there was something going on in my life. He said, I really think you need to go talk to your minister. So I did. I went and I spent some time with him, and he said, this is so far above my head. You need professional help. Well, you didn't do that. You just did not do that. So I waited till I was out of school and I could pay for it myself, and I went and found me a psychiatrist, and I started seeing him, and I saw him for about 10 years.
And it certainly sounds like it was wonderfully successful for you.
It was. It definitely was.
When is My Five Sisters going to be turned into a film?
Well, you know, I'm working with a screenwriter right now, so I'm starting to write the screenplay.
Wonderful.
So I have my fingers crossed.
All right. Well, please keep us up to date and let us know what happens with that.
I will. And I'm on my second book now. The second book is going to be The Sisters, and it's going to be fiction, but it's going to be from their perspective of what they lived through.
That sounds like a fascinating book. Please do let us know when that comes out.
I will. It's coming out next year.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay.
Pam Franklin, what a lovely first name. I've been meaning to mention that. Pam Franklin, author of My Five Sisters, a psychological thriller based on a true story about multiple personalities. It has also been described as a raw and chilling portrait of survival, should be required reading for psychology students. Thank you very much for spending time with us today, Pam.
Thank you.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. You can listen to Mind Talk, to this program, and any Mind Talk program whenever you choose by going to myndtalk.org. That's myndtalk.org. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301-654-5286. 301-654-5286. Mind Talk is provided daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace you're working with any medical, mental health, or other professional of your choice. And folks, remember always, if it is unacceptable, then that is precisely what it is. Unacceptable. You take care.